Hey, it's Jesse Kohler. It has been a number of months since I last recorded a podcast for Press On, or any other podcast for that matter. To be honest, the coronavirus pandemic has been a whirlwind, I think, for all of us. I have honestly hit the books, done a lot of research and reading, and tried to help develop plans and priorities to create a trauma-informed response to the coronavirus pandemic, as well as the structural racism and systemic inequalities that exist in America that have really been magnified over the last few months as well. It seemed like a fitting time to record again. The last podcast episode that I did was with my mentor, Dan Press, after the death of Elijah Cummings. And yesterday was the funeral for another prominent Black activist politician, John Lewis. And it seemed like a good time to speak up, and perhaps we'll see what happens through all this, but potentially get into some good trouble as well, as he said. You know, I was struck by the everything that he overcame, which was really exemplified throughout the whole funeral process and the many people that gave eulogies at his funeral, spoke about what he went through as a young man to organize the Freedom Rides and the march from Selma, I believe it was, to Montgomery. It's humbling as a 26-year-old to see this great man. You know, I knew I would have only known him as a 70-year-old or 80-year-old if I were to ever meet him, which I never got the pleasure of. But to look back at him as a 23-year-old speaking at the March on Washington, to hear about the pain and brutality that he overcame through nonviolence is remarkable. And then to think about how at the end of his life, he worked so hard and tirelessly to defeat systemic and structural racism, and at the end of his life to be so sadly reminded that there was so much work left to do. I certainly can't appreciate how difficult that must have been, but I can absolutely appreciate what he did for our country, or at least try to, and work myself to follow in his footsteps, Elijah Cummings' footsteps, people of the like, who genuinely good people who fought and worked. It's not right to say that John Lewis fought, because he preached and believed in nonviolence from a very early age. But he worked his rear end off to defeat and overcome structural inequities, especially racism. But you heard from others who have spoken since that it was more than just racism. It was, you know, LGBTQ plus rights. It was equal access. It was everything. It was just righting the wrongs in our society. And it's inspiring. You know, since the last podcast that we did, the National Trauma Campaign is officially off the ground. We were able to do some work in COVID-19, as well as around structural inequities. And both of those are ongoing pieces of work. But we're moving a little bit. We're not nearly far enough. There are people who, especially during these times, are in need of some trauma-informed programs and practices and policies, are in need of a consistent federal response and state response, frankly, and in some cases, local responses to a pandemic that is killing and hurting people, more people than I think any of us really could possibly have foreseen at the beginning of all this so quickly. 150,000 people dead in less than 6 months is a remarkable and staggering figure. There is a deep-seated need in our nation to develop policies and programs that are in line with the neuroscience and the psychology that we know today and that matter so much. I think that we have not the whole blueprint set out, but we know how to make things better than they are today. And, with no money, with no staff, just volunteer time, it's difficult, but we're moving forward. And it's a shame that sometimes I look back and it takes someone passing away to kick into that next gear. But hearing about John Lewis and looking back on his life and learning more, I'm ready. I've been ready. And now it's just at the next step. And that's really what's inspired this next podcast and this next episode. You know, something that hit me so much was that he wrote a final letter to the New York Times that was published. And he talked about how in the last days of his life, he was so inspired by the youth in our country. I think that one of the strengths that has probably, that likely helped him overcome so many barriers and obstacles was that he didn't focus on the bad. He focused on the good. He could have focused on how black men and women are still being killed in this nation. I mean, this year alone, there's been several at the hands of law enforcement and the government. But instead, he focused on how people are continuing to mobilize and march to support these issues and equity and equality and moving toward a more just and better future. I think that there's beauty in that. I think that it's so powerful. And I do believe that though his physical body is gone, his spirit certainly lives on. And the fight that he, again, not a fight, the movement that he helped to get to where it is, he helped carry it for so long, he carried the torch. It's still moving. And it's in large part thanks to him. The role that the trauma-informed effort plays in this is certainly not the whole effort around racism. But there does need to be an understanding and reckoning of the trauma that has been inflicted on communities of color and indigenous communities and black communities for centuries in this country. Epigenetics shows us how that has perhaps altered the genetic sequence and code of certain individuals. Trauma experienced leaves a lasting impact. And we need to at least begin by acknowledging the impact that these experiences have had on more than just individuals and families, but entire communities. You could argue societies. We need to invest in trauma-informed, brain science-oriented, resilience-focused programs that promote well-being. It's been interesting there during the coronavirus to see the huge disparities in race, in how the coronavirus impacts people of different races. It impacts everybody. It can kill anyone. But if you look at death data, Black and Latin and Latino communities are devastated by this at a disproportionate rate and at a disproportionate level. We look at why that is the case. And there are two main causes. You have unequal access to healthcare. So people are dying because they're not able to get treatment right away. And if they do get treatment, they're not able to get the same level of treatment that wealthier folks are able to get, which is unfair and not right, because all life is sacred and we have the money to invest to be able to help people. And then you also have pre-existing conditions. And when we look at what causes certain pre-existing conditions, we can look no further than the ACEs study to see that a primal cause of many of the pre-existing conditions that exacerbate symptoms and the effects of the coronavirus are adverse childhood experiences and trauma more broadly. Again, the adverse childhood experiences study does not encompass all parts of trauma. It is a very limited, narrow window of a few different types of trauma. But what we're able to do is quantify the effects that trauma has on people and their health and well-being. The impact that it has had on communities of color is disproportionate in part because they are more at risk, because they have to deal with unnecessary stress and adversity, which increases stress hormones over a long period of time, right? In the short term, the fight, flight, and freeze response saves our lives. When there is unrelenting stress and overwhelming adversity, and that fight, flight, or freeze response is almost on constantly, it ultimately kills us. That's where it plays into the pre-existing conditions. And that is where the lack of investment in communities and in building resilience is killing people. And though this is a unique scenario and the pandemic is ravaging communities regardless of pre-existing conditions, it puts people at a disproportionate risk to have deadly consequences to catching the coronavirus. We need to invest in these communities and other communities to continue to build resilience. We see the need for resilience beyond just this example. We see the need for equal access beyond just this example. We have already begun to see, and we will continue to see, the effects of climate change and the climate crisis impact various communities and harm a lot of people. There's someone on CTIP's board, his name is Bob Doppelt, and he continues to make the argument that we need to build community level resilience, because at this point, there is almost no doubt that the climate crisis is going to destroy communities. We saw it with fires. We've seen it with hurricanes and earthquakes. Earthquakes is less climate change. That's obviously tectonic plates, and that just... But there is still a need to build community-level resilience when natural disasters strike, and they continue to strike at increasing rates and perhaps in greater magnitude. And we need to be prepared to come together as a community to survive and make sure that our children and the youth in our country still have opportunities to not just survive, but thrive. We are investing money, our nation's dollars, in the wrong things. We can see the priorities of our country in the policies that we pass, sure. But where we put our money proves what we prioritize. And I look at the COVID packages that came out, and we have put so much money into places that I honestly believe it would be better off elsewhere. I believe that we put $500 billion into airlines that are now laying off workers 3 months later. Meanwhile, people couldn't get hospital care. Meanwhile, education systems were unprepared for when school's about to open and people aren't going to be able to go back. And if they do go back, there are going to be some very, very scary consequences to that. Until there's a cure, until there's a vaccine, people are going to continue to get sick. People are going to continue to die. And schools were unprepared. We did not have in our systems any sort of support for communities that didn't have access to technology, that didn't have, even communities that do have access to technology are struggling educationally. Then you look at people who don't have the same access. You look at people with special needs or learning differences. And there are needs that are not being met, and that will have long-term consequences on our economy, on our society, on our nation, on our world. It is an incredible learning experience to have watched all of this unfold and to have really dug deep into the policies over the last several months and see all the need that exists, to see everything that could have been done so much better from the beginning of the pandemic, learn from things that we did well, but there is an inordinate amount of holes that we can see in the response at almost every level of government to this pandemic that has led to more people dying, that has led to an economic toll that there would have been an economic toll to this, but it perhaps did not have to be so great, that has led to the travesty that we are all living through currently. It's not the first time, and it won't be the last time, that we face challenges. But I do hope that it's the last time that we are led by somebody who is completely unqualified to be making decisions that affect all of our lives, and who is so arrogant to believe that he has all the answers. This is where the good trouble comes in, and what I was hoping to get to. the founder and executive director of ACES Connection, Jane Stevens, just wrote a piece on following Mary Trump's book, how Trump's childhood experiences, his ACEs, have impacted his lack of empathy, his arrogance, his need to be the greatest, the best, the biggest, and to flaunt that even when it isn't true. Really, it's that scared child inside of him that's crying out when he says all of these things. That's what his campaign was built on. Tearing other people down because in his childhood he didn't feel cared for. When we saw him making decisions and policies about what was happening at the border, tearing children away from their parents, and he didn't care because he had his own abandonment issues. There are millions of children in our country, billions across the world, who experience these sorts of tragedies all the time. We can invest in better childhoods. We can invest in the development of our youth. And it's not to say that there needs to be a perfect childhood. There is no such thing. But to build resilience and to have healthy relationships and invest in those relationships, to invest in caring adults and people and individuals, so that way every child, every adult has someone in their life who cares and who's looking out for them genuinely. These are all very possible. It's very doable. But our society doesn't invest in those things. Not enough, at least. Doesn't invest in the development of teachers enough. It doesn't invest in meaningful development and coordinated social responses when there are children in need. It's in competition with itself. The systems that make up our society are not in competition with one another. They should all be working cooperatively so that way we can move forward and toward a better economy, a better world. The costs that trauma and adversity have are tremendous. World Health Organization said that it's $748 billion a year just on ACEs, that small sliver of the pie, just on the healthcare system alone. $748 billion a year in the United States. Compare that to the inordinate amount of money that our government invests in its military, which is $738 billion a year. I'm not, by the way, advocating that we shouldn't have a military, but we should invest some of that, a large amount of that, into the communities domestically that need it. We invest so much money in the destruction of other nations, in the destruction of others, while we have our own being destroyed here. We spend more on bombs than we spend on social services in many cases. We have messed up priorities. We need to fix that. We can fix that. That's what the National Trauma Campaign is trying to get at. The comprehensive vision that we're working toward is saying that we need to create systems that work together to care for the people in our country, those most in need and those privileged. Everyone needs and deserves to be cared for and loved, and the opportunity to love others. I don't believe that the answer comes from one side of the aisle. I do not mean to suggest that Democrats are the problem or the solution, and or that Republicans are the problem or the solution. There needs to be solutions that come from both sides, and there needs to be compromise and conversation, open dialogue, to reach the goals that we want to get to. I don't see Trump as speaking for every Republican. I think that we have entered into a bipartisan world that has created a binary, ultimately, and the world doesn't exist in binaries. Binaries are complicit with absolutism, and despite my using the word absolute earlier, I don't believe in absolutes. Nothing is absolute. Things exist on spectrums, and we need to find ideas that span multiple people's experiences. We are products of our environments. We are shaped by our experiences, and no two peoples are the same. So we see the world differently, and there's beauty in that. There is beauty in diversity. There is beauty in inclusion. We need to promote all voices to have their side heard and to be heard. And like I said, to be cared for and loved, especially children, which is not done at this point in time. I've worked in the inner city. I've worked in education. And I have seen far too many kids come to school and go home and come again and go home and be silenced and locked into their shell. And as hard as one person can try, it's almost impossible to break a system without systems level change. One person can be the world for anybody, but they need to be supported in order to do that for more people. We have the power and the ability to do that, and to not cause unnecessary hate and strife on others, but rather to love and lift up others who may see the world differently, who may have different experiences than we do. We need to stop being divisive. We need to stop fighting ourselves when there is so much that we have to solve. It will be a struggle to work through. It will certainly be a process and a journey, but there is beauty in the process and the journey. We look at someone like John Lewis, who came up during the civil rights movement, a young man from Troy, Alabama. And who died during mass protests for racial inequality and police brutality. And we see that we can't control where we end up. If you asked him in the 60s where he would be when he was 80 years old and dying, first of all, he would probably not believe that he would live to 80. But if he did, I don't think that he thought, if he knew everything that he was able to accomplish, he would not have believed that he would have left this world with similar protests, seeing the same level of brutality that he faced on that bridge in Selma. We can't control the end result. We can control the process that we go through, the work that we put in day to day, and taking advantage of moments. I believe that this podcast has been a bit all over the place, and for that, I do apologize. but I'm tired of being quiet. I will learn how to use my voice better. I will learn how to organize my thoughts better. I was convinced for a while that what I needed to do was study. What I needed to do was manage the campaign. And I am convinced that I still need to do those things. But I also need to speak up and use my voice. I don't know if anybody's going to hear it. It's been painful. Because the whole time I've tried talking to people. And sometimes I don't feel heard. But that's not going to keep me silenced anymore. This is a platform that I have. And I hope that it grows. I hope to get to the point that John Lewis or Elijah Cummings, I don't compare myself to them. They are far better men and overcame way more than I will ever have to. But I hope to get to that level of power. But again, like I said, it's not where I end up. It's the journey that I take. It's the journey that we all take. I alone have no power. Very, very limited power, at least. You can hear that doing podcasts at home during the coronavirus is difficult. There's a lot going on. Alone, I don't have a lot of power. The bigger my sphere of influence gets can only be caused by the amount of people that I have alongside of me. And I hope that that continues to grow. I hope that I can get into some good trouble with others and shake things up a bit and change what has become the normal in our society, even though it is counterintuitive to what we ultimately want to see happen. I hope that we can bridge the bipartisan divide and bring people together to see that there is beauty in the way that liberals see the world, and there is beauty in the way that conservatives see the world, and there will be even more beauty when we can bring them together and find a compromise. I do believe that our world and our country can get better, can heal, but we need to address the traumas and the adversities that we faced. We need to address them head on and not shy away from the painful pasts that we've lived. Again, this is not going to be the last episode that I do. So I'll stop for today, collect my thoughts, reorganize, and come back with a new episode. But if anybody joined me, I appreciate it greatly, more than you know. To sign up for the trauma campaign, you can go to ctip.org/national trauma campaign. We need more advocates, more people to do outreach. We'll connect with you as a core team, as a campaign core team. Nothing that I said is necessarily the belief of the National Trauma Campaign. We are bipartisan. We do not talk about political candidates. I felt the need to, because every day I see past trauma play out due to fractured narratives controlling someone's life. And I find sympathy for that human. I believe that a lot of the policies that have been passed are destructive. And I do not defend or condone that. That's why we need to build resilience. That's why we need trauma-sensitive programs and policies that support people who have difficult childhoods, so that way they don't grow up to hurt others. Like the chair of CTIP, Sandy Bloom, has said and published in many books, hurt people hurt people. There is pain behind those decisions. I know. We need to support people so that way in the future we don't have leaders taking out their own pain on millions of others and causing destruction because of their own pasts. And on a smaller level, we need the same programs, policies, so that way individuals don't cause harm to other individuals, unnecessary harm. No matter what we do, there will be trauma. Trauma is a part of life. It is a cost that we pay for this beautiful privilege of living in this world today. Trauma will exist. It's the unnecessary burdens. It's the unnecessary adversity, the overwhelming and toxic stress, the unrelentingness of these experiences, the racism, the sexism, the bigotry, the oppression, not being able to make a livable wage, not being able to get support that you need. These are all things that we can fix, that we can invest in, and that will have huge payoffs in the long run. I'll leave you with this. If we invest our money in saving costs in the long run, we will dig ourselves out of this debt that we are within trillions, tens of trillions of dollars in. We can get out of that in the long run. It won't be immediate. And we may have to pay a little bit up front. But that is how we will get out. By investing in a better future. By investing in a stronger economy. By investing in each other. By investing in love. By investing love in one another. Not just to be loved, but to love. It's a give and take. And when we can find that balance, there is so much promise for what we and our world can be. I know that Elijah Cummings and John Lewis, they knew a lot more than I do. But they saw that. They saw that those investments pay off. They knew that if we could do that on a broader scale, and they worked for it, we would see such magnificent transformation in our society. And I am determined with my life to work toward those ends. I have a lot to learn, and I will need many people to support and join me. And many people have, but we need a lot more. But I know that we can reach a beautiful place if we work together long and hard enough. And I know it will all be worth it. Thank you again for joining. I'll see you soon.